Welcome to the Kick Cave. In this edition of Kick to Kick, we head straight to the mailroom to answer some questions. We then have our question of the day in giving a belated Christmas gift to any club we can in 1901. We give you some history from the year, then we get stuck into the 1901 season, and finally we look at the finals, and guess what? There's a new format. All that and more coming up after the song.
It's the history of football we knows about, and we want to expand what we know. We'll become such intelligent gentry with every Kick to Kick show. Beginning in the time 1870, right through to the modern day. Tune in for Timmy Coops and the Kazman to hear what they all have to say.
Yes, and welcome to this edition of the Kick to Kick podcast. My name is Tim. To my left, I have Kaz.
Hi.
I mixed it up today. And to my right, I have Coops.
I'm so confused. I don't know what's going on anymore.
Welcome to this new year edition. It is now the year 2018.
Ah, so we're only 117 years behind now.
Yeah.
Well, so we've actually gone up one, yeah.
But it's quite nice that we've got a new year here, and we're in the new year for the podcast, and the year we're focusing on is 1901, which is the Federation year for Australia.
Yeah, no more player of the colonies.
No more champion of the colony. I guess we'll have to call it champion of the Commonwealth.
That's even further. I like that. Yeah. That's great. Yeah, it's a further spread.
Yeah.
Maybe we could refer back to the Argus still calls it champion of the colony, I think. So we're like able that. To call it that.
It's not
still
a colony anymore.
No.
Anyway, on today's show, we are going to start by, well, actually, first we did call it the Kick Cave on the in the opener there. We're happy with the Kick Cave?
Yeah, I like it. I like it.
Yeah?
It's got a nice ring to it. Good intonation.
Here we are in the Kick Cave.
Here we are in the Kick Cave. It doesn't have any echoes, so that's quite good for a cave. We're going to head to the mailroom to start off, and I have some mail here from the mailroom somewhere.
It's just been brought up to you.
Hold on. I've lost it. Mail boy.
Oh, mail boy.
Oh, here it is. Someone put it in
Come
the
on,
wrong
Jimmy.
Envelope. Wrong envelope.
Unbelievable.
It's his first day.
Hey, guys. Why did you guys call the show Kick to Kick, and can you please explain the lyrics of the theme song? Love, Super Crandy. Well, Super Crandy, great name to start with. Why did we call it the Kick to Kick podcast?
Well, we had to call it something.
We had to call it something.
It didn't come from the original letter that the original post
Tom
that
Wills.
Tom Wills put up saying they needed something to do in the off season, and a good kick to kick would be a good way to keep the flow, the fitness,
yeah.
The flow,
that's
the
right.
Fitness
the
going.
Kickers.
Yeah, it's, it mentioned a kick to kick in his first
Did it?
Poster, I believe.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Accidental?
Good. Yeah.
I think not.
And possibly we're also, you know, the very first kick, we're going to follow that from 1858, I think it was, when they first had that kick, all the way through to 2018 now.
Mm.
But I very much doubt we'll get through 117 episodes this year.
Yeah. We're just going to keep on going backwards, yeah.
So that is, you know, we're following all the kicks that they've had, and kick to kick.
Nice, Rev.
To kick, to kick, to kick.
To kick, to kick. Is a fun little game you play with your friends, so you know.
And this is a fun little game we play with our friends.
It is,
and we're all friends now, aren't we?
Indeed.
And the lyrics to the theme song. So let's go through those lyrics very quickly.
It's the history of football. We know.
Okay, and that's pretty obvious. We know about the history, but we want to expand what we know.
Yeah.
To become such intelligent gentry.
Yeah. Well, we want to become more. Yeah.
Yeah.
And more knowledgeable.
And we are, by researching this, we definitely are.
Absolutely.
Yes.
It's very much helped me in a lot of trivia so far.
Has it?
Oh, yeah, it really has. I've become knowledgeable about a very small fact. Yeah.
Well, a little bit of world history.
A little
and
bit
and
sprinkled in there, but I remember none of that, so yeah. A bit of footy stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I can talk to St Kilda players now,
St. Kilda
supporters with more reverence.
Just say, oh, guys, feel your pain.
That's yeah. Right.
Yeah. 48 straight games.
That's what it was like the other day.
Beginning in the time 1870. So why didn't we say the year 1858? 1870, I think, was the first VFA season.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
The first structured football season. That's why we started with that. right through to the present day, which we will get to
eventually.
It's got everything a good theme has.
Yeah,
you know, it explains things. It's got a snappy tune.
Yeah. What's the last? Oh, tune in to Timmy Kaz and the Coops and the Kazman. Yeah, so listen to us and hear what we have to say.
And you're doing that now, so yeah. Well done.
So super crandy. I hope that really explains the backstory
to the song
of the song and why, you know, why we're called Kick to Kick and why we have those lyrics.
Yeah, please write in again.
All right. Well, our question of the day. We probably need a jingle for question of the day, don't we? We don't have one at the moment. Our question of the day was. And it's a little bit belated now, but what belated Christmas gift would you give to any clubs if you could go back to the Christmas 1900 for the 1901 season?
For the 1901 season.
Kaz?
Well, I think I would give them a very, very big coaching budget.
Who? Every club?
Every club.
Yeah.
Somehow. They can work on their game plans and become professional, but they get there eventually, don't they?
They do.
Yeah, because it seems like they're screaming out for it, and they're so passionate about it. The crowd love it so much, and you know they get to the games, and there's fights, there's stuff being thrown on the ground. It's yeah, something like that.
Yeah, nice. Kids.
I was thinking about this, and there's so many things. Of that time that we look back and think, oh gosh, if only they had what we have now, you know, to make them, well, more professional and, you know, all those things. But I think it would just take away so much from what we love so much about the game. It is part of that history and how it has evolved. But looking back on it, you know, people rushing the ground and different anecdotal things that happened have created the game that we love now. So I'd love to... give
that's a good point,
the entire league footage of what AFL looks like now, just so they can watch it and see what it will become in the future.
That would also give all supporters hope as well.
Yeah, exactly.
Because all clubs win premierships.
Yeah, all of them. Yeah, especially just give St Kilda. Maybe don't give them all the ones that they lost.
Yeah.
Maybe just give them, you know, yeah.
You will win one.
One.
That's all that matters.
You got it.
You
got
to wait another.
You're going to win at least one.
65 years from now, 66 years now.
But wouldn't that be just fascinating just to have, you know, all those players see the MCG with 100,000 people in it?
Or the style of play.
Just the way it's played and how many people are, you know, on the bench and how much media there is around it and all those sorts of things coming from where it was when these guys were playing.
It's like, and one of those, have you seen the latest Rocky movie?
Creed.
Not Creed, the one before that, Rocky 5, where they do like a computer simulation of Rocky versus some current player.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
Wouldn't you love to do that, like the 1900 Melbourne team versus the current Melbourne team, like to simulate what would actually happen, who would win a game.
Who would go to training camp, all those sorts of things, yeah.
If you played 1901 rules, it'd be more interesting as well.
Yeah.
No interchange. No 18 interchange. Players.
18 players. Yeah, God. No one would be able to make it.
That'd be interesting.
Yeah.
Surely one day we'll have the technology where we can do that.
Compare and simulate,
you know, this team versus that team. What is the best team of all time?
It would be so interesting, wouldn't it?
The projections and the projected scores are almost sort of starting that, aren't they, already? Yeah. But that doesn't take into account all the playing and the skills.
You could do it for like the 1950s and onwards, but there's no
that
stats.
Far back. No.
There's no stats, is there?
No, it's just goals.
Yeah.
You can't see anything else, yeah. And Timmy, what about you? What would you get and for whom?
I would talk to Carlton and I would give them patience. Firstly, I'd say you be grateful that St Kilda is in the league, because if St Kilda wasn't in the league, everyone would be like, Carlton is so shit. Because, I mean, you think about it, they finished second last every single season.
But yeah, they just...
But because St Kilda have barely won a game, Carlton kind of escape. So firstly, Carlton, you thank St Kilda that they are there, because they are taking the heat away from you.
I think that barely won a game needs to be clarified, because they only barely won one game. Like, barely won a game doesn't mean they've won two in a couple of years.
Yeah, it took them 4 days.
To win a single game. Yeah.
So I say, Carlton, you wait, because your time is coming.
Yeah.
That's right.
Patience.
Yeah.
That's good.
I think they were called a sleeping giant.
Yeah, they weren't at this stage, but once they, like, after this year, then there's a few things that start happening that get the ball rolling, and they really weaken.
Mm. Yes.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's get into the year 1901. Okay. With a bit of history, Kaz.
Yes, well...
Do we have a little sound effect, possibly?
Yes, we do, and it goes a bit
what?
Like...
It goes something like this.
Give us some history!
There we go, all right.
Excellent.
History for the year 1901.
Well, in 1901, the very first thing that happened on January 1st was the British colonies of New South Wales, Queensland, South Australia, Tasmania, Victoria and Western Australia federate as the Commonwealth of Australia. And
finally,
Edmund Barton became the first Prime Minister of Australia. So no more champion of the colonies, although was it still called the champion of the colonies in 1901, Kaz?
Well, looking back at in these books, it's still described specifically as champion of the colony, maybe because they don't have another name for it.
Yeah, they haven't figured it out yet.
Hmm.
We can start calling them the champion of the Commonwealth,
yeah,
though.
Yeah.
I like that.
The population of Australia was 3,774,000 at that time.
Queen Victoria died, age 81.
And King Edward the VII took over?
Edward the VII took over, yes.
Yep.
And on a bit of sports news here, on January 28th, the baseball's American League finally declared itself a major league. So good on them for finally catching up with us. What else happened? In April, New York became the first US state to require automobiles to have license plates.
Ooh. Otherwise, they're just driving around willy-nilly, getting in kind of accidents and getting away with it.
And, yeah, no one knows who they are.
Yeah, there was an assassination attempt on King Kaiser Wilhelm II in Bremen.
Yes. And
imagine
there
if
was...
that had been successful.
Sorry?
Imagine if that had been successful.
Well, exactly.
Might have changed the course of history.
We wouldn't have had a World War I, maybe. Or we would have just had World War I and no World War II.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there was a successful assassination on President William McKinley.
In America,
yeah. He shot him in Buffalo, New York, and he died 8 days later.
Wow.
And then Vice President at the time, Theodore Roosevelt, became the president because of that.
Nice. In England, in the UK, there was the highest ever level of manufacturing employment.
Ah,
so it reached its peak, the Industrial Revolution.
Mm. And then it came down from there. And
yeah.
Another one I had, which isn't really historically interesting, but just an interesting one. On October the 24th, a Michigan school teacher named Annie Edison Taylor went over Niagara Falls in a barrel and survived. Which I really liked. I thought that was fantastic.
Just because.
Just, like, she did it on purpose.
Oh, okay.
Genius, yeah.
Kaz, you got a few things?
Yeah, someone called William S. Harley draws up plans for the first prototype Harley
motorbike.
Mm. There you go. Do you reckon that teacher would have been telling her kids all about that?
Oh, yeah, when she got back. How was your weekend, Miss Taylor? Well.
See if you can do this. I've been over there. Niagara
do as
Falls.
I say it, not as I do, kids.
And there was Kenneth Slessor, who was a famous Australian poet, was born in this year.
Well, one other interesting thing that happened on December the 10th, the first Nobel Prize ceremony was held in Stockholm.
Yep.
On the 5th anniversary of Alfred Nobel's death.
Mm.
And then for births as well, continuing on from what you were just saying, Kaz, there are a few interesting ones. A couple of American actors, Gary Cooper and Clark Gable, were both born in 1901.
Aha.
Florence Green, who was the last surviving World War One veteran who died in 2012, was born on February 19 of that year.
Oh, that's cool.
So she was born in 1901.
Yes.
And served... as a teenager in World War
One. World War One, and died in 2012, so she lived to 112.
Jeez.
Mm. Louis Armstrong was born.
Nice.
Gordon Coventry was born in 1901.
Sure, we'll hear more about him.
Yeah.
About 18 years.
Yeah.
Mm.
And Chuck Taylor was also born, who is the American basketball player who created the Chuck Taylor shoes, the Converse, Taylor's.
Was he a basketball?
Yeah.
Was he?
Ah. Yeah.
Basketball wasn't around...
American basketball player and salesman.
Okay.
Well, he wasn't around in 1901 when he was born.
No, okay, yeah.
And also, the last one, Walt Disney was born in 1901.
The only interesting other thing I had here was that Abraham Lincoln's body was dug up enemy burial site was found.
And he was encased in like 3 tons of concrete or something.
But then they had to do it again like 30 years later.
Is that because they didn't want people to find out that he was a vampire slayer
from
that documentary that came out a couple of years ago?
Oh.
Is that what happened?
Possibly. And song of the year was A Mighty Like a Mighty Lack of Rose. I've got here
Lack of Rose. Okay,
I've got mistyped it. Anything like
From the Australian ones I was looking at, it's it was the construction of the rabbit-proof fence.
Oh,
in, 1901.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, there you go.
I couldn't slip that in anywhere. I knew that if I brought that in the end,
that's all right.
It wouldn't be that exciting.
All right, so let's get into the season of 1901, and we will do this by ladder position as well. So the first thing is another new final system was added this year, the Argus.
The Argus system, yes.
Yeah, so after 1900, where Melbourne won, they came from sixth position, I think, to win.
They did. They were sixth, and they...
They won all three sectional finals.
Yeah, they finished with like 3 losses in the last 3 rounds of the home and away season, didn't they?
Something like that. They won their sectional finals. So the way the league changed it this year is that they added the sectional finals was not finals anymore. It was just extra matches tacked on to the end of the season, and then that counted towards the ladder at the end of the season. The interesting thing is that they're constantly talking about doing something like this in the AFL because in 2018 because the fixture is uneven because you don't play everyone twice. So you play everyone once and then you play a series of other matches against other teams and they calculate that a certain way. They keep talking about, you know, breaking them into sections or...
Yeah, like and doing it almost similar to the years before in the VFL, isn't it? Like you do 1-3-5-7-9 and split it that way.
Yeah, you could do it that way, 1-3-7-5.
Well, because... It would make more sense, wouldn't it, than the current system where, you know, they pick, or the whoever decides the fixture picks based on the previous year's finishing results. Yeah. But so much happens in an off-season that you don't know what could change, you know, all the draft picks you pick up and just things click and come together for some teams. Like you look at, well, Richmond this year, last year, the Bulldogs the year before.
Yeah.
Those teams were nowhere, and they probably only got to the position they were was because of the system. Place they finished the year before they actually came good.
Yep.
Mm. Yeah.
So this is what they're doing. Back in 1901, they had these sectional games where they grouped teams. So the difference was they played these sectional games now, but they were added to the final ladder. So a team like Melbourne, who had a crap season, couldn't then just fluke it for those 3 games to win the flag.
No.
They had to have it. They had to have backed it up through their season proper. And they also, it was more of a top four now as well. So the top four teams played each other. So one played 3 and 2 played 4. And the winner of those 2 games played in the grand final.
Mm.
The other thing is they took away the right to challenge from the team that finished on top.
So one played 3 and 2 played 4. So not 1 and 4 and 2 and 3.
No.
There you go.
Yeah.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah. So that was the final system. Interesting to note...
Was it named the Argus system because the paper came up with it?
I assume so.
Mm. Something we can look into.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It'd be interesting. Someone at the paper completely coming up with the new system. And basically a not football playing person involved in the administration. Completely someone who's not involved as a player or coach
or an administrator,
anything.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a lot of journalists who would love that now.
They've got lots of suggestions, probably.
Now, some interesting things about this season as well before we get stuck into the teams is from round 2 was played on May 9th, which was a Thursday, and then round 3 on Saturday the 11th. So they played 2 games in the space of 3 days, or 3 games in the space of a week.
Mm.
And same happened, round 6 was Saturday in June, then round 7 was on the Monday in the holiday, so they played again, game on Saturday, game on Monday.
And then again the next Saturday as well.
Yeah, because they were public holidays, so they used those to showcase the game.
Mm.
And the other thing was 16 games were decided by a goal or less throughout this 1901 season, so it was quite a close season.
So 16 out of 71 games, I think, in the whole season.
Okay.
I believe.
Matt's
I just Rain Man that.
Four times 17... is
Oh, I'm busting out the phone.
Anyway, 72. No.
Plus three finals. Anyway. Yep. So let's get stuck into it. We will start with St Kilda, who again finished eighth.
Poor old St Kilda.
But they finally won a game on the day that it was played. Congratulations, St Kilda.
Finally.
So round 12, they beat Carlton 7-8-50 to Carlton 4-8-32. So a good three-goal win there by St Kilda. And they got to celebrate it on the game, on the
Which
day.
Which is just fantastic for
the
them,
siren,
isn't it?
Siren rang. They could cheer.
For all 10 of the people who were still holding on and supporting them. They did a fantastic job.
They had a promising start to the season as well. They didn't lose by as much. They lost by 8 points to South, then 47 to Western, 37 to Melbourne, 20 points to Carlton. So they had, you know, they weren't losing. They weren't being thumped like they had been. And I found an article in the Argus that said that although they kept losing, St Kilda's just happy for the exercise and fresh air.
Oh, isn't that nice? Another participation award for St Kilda. I like that. That would never be said about a team these days. If your team was doing that poorly, the papers would rip you apart.
The coach would be gone.
Especially
if you'd said that.
Yeah.
The coach would be gone, the prisoner would be gone, the CEO would be gone, most of the players would be gone.
They'd be in crisis.
Yeah, they'd be in total crisis mode. But
not this happy-go-lucky club.
They just love a run around. Look at them. Look how happy they are.
So St Kilda finished eighth with one win, 16 losses, and a percentage of 32.14.
And not much really else to say about them, was there?
No,
unfortunately.
Not really. No. But they have some happier times ahead-ish.
Ahead-ish.
Things will turn around.
Eventually. And then turn back, unfortunately.
Yeah. No. All right. Then we get to Carlton, who finished seventh again.
Mm.
Like I said, they perennially finish second last. Mm. They should be happy St Kilda's in the league. They had two wins for the season, which was three less than the year before. So they're going backwards a little bit there. They beat only St Kilda and South Melbourne.
Once each,
yeah.
So St Kilda's win was
against Carlton. Ernie Walton was their acting captain for 3 weeks while William Stuckey was out.
So Stuckey had been captain for the previous four years, hadn't he?
I think so,
Was continuing to be captain coach.
He was, yeah. So he was out, but Ernie Walton filled in while he was injured. And their best win came in round four, and one of their only two wins, which was against South Melbourne. They had a 4-point win there, which, you know, beating any other team apart from St Kilda should be a good win.
Yeah.
And Carlton seemed to kind of have the wood over South Melbourne here and there as well. They've beaten them a few times.
Mm. Joe Selden won the goal kicking and he's...
For Carlton?
Yeah. And he's played really well since last year as well. But goes on to be a good player too. So...
Nice. So Carlton finished 7th, 2 wins, 15 losses, a percentage of 46.99. Which gets us to South Melbourne, who finished 6th. And the ladder I'm looking at now is the ladder after the sectionals, so which changed slightly after the season proper. So I'm including sectional finals.
Yeah.
Oh, not sectional finals, just sectional
sections
games.
Added sectional games.
Yeah. Now, there wasn't a heap of information I could find about South Melbourne.
No, and no, I don't. Me neither. There wasn't a lot. We were saying before we started recording today, you know, the fact that we're talking for an hour about these seasons where it's very hard to find information about anyone means that we're probably going to be talking for about 4 hours by the time we get to the 60s.
Part one, part two, part three.
Exactly, which means that every year that goes on, we're just going to keep falling further and further behind, I think.
That's okay.
But that's all right. You know, that's what we're here for.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To improve what we know, to become intelligent gentry. So this is what I found. They weren't consistent for the whole season. They kind of had 3 wins and 4 losses to begin with and kind of 1 win, 1 loss here. Their best win was in round 2 against Melbourne. They won by 4 points and I think they only scored 2 points in the first quarter, so they kind of... That was their best win for the whole season.
Lowly Melbourne
of the 8 wins they had. And there was a week off before the sectional games, so South Melbourne decided to travel up to Rutherglen and play a country team, and they lost. to Rutherglen by 13 points.
Which is a really great way to come into the sectionals.
What an embarrassment.
Just full of confidence.
And following that, they lost their first two sectionals and only won their last sectional, which was against Carlton. So, I mean, really, what does that say?
It's like the year before, Melbourne had a good win against St Kilda in the sectionals. Just reminded me of that.
So South Melbourne finished sixth with 8 wins, 9 losses and a percentage of 99.59. Next is the Fuchsias.
The D's coming up one spot from their fifth the year before.
Yeah, from sixth the year before.
From sixth. Yes.
So they... what I read was that all their games with South Melbourne in the past have been quite close. And so in round 9, they beat South Melbourne by 16 points, and that was the biggest margin they'd had in the game since 1897.
Against South Melbourne.
Yeah, so if you look at it, so 1900, they'd won by 8 points and 3 points. Yeah. Sorry, South won by 8 points and 3 points. The year before, they'd each won by 7 points. The year before, it was 13 and 2 points. The biggest win was by South Melbourne in 1897 by 53 points. So they're quite close games.
Yeah.
South Melbourne and Melbourne, so they won it. And
generally.
Won quite a bit. Before the round 12 victory over Essendon, did you see what William McClellan said?
I did not.
Yeah, this is interesting.
Yeah, he called his team a bunch of cripples before they won a game over Essendon.
Yes, political correctness had not kicked in public by then.
So he called his own team cripples?
Yeah, we're a sorry lot of cripples, but we'll make them play before they beat Essendon.
Is that in relation to the fact that we must have been, I'm assuming, must have been injured? Yeah. Well, so maybe he was sort of prefacing the fact that he thought we were going to lose. I mean, like, we're all stuffed.
Yeah, so it's not bravado, is it?
I hope not.
The Argus actually reported that injury and accident accented their season.
Yes.
So there was just inconsistency across the board.
Throughout.
They only entered the top four in round 13, but then couldn't maintain that.
Yes.
After the sectionals.
Well, following the injury theme, a player comes back called Fred McGuinness, we've spoken about, and he unfortunately gets injured badly again after coming back. This I can talk about him a little bit. So this is straight out of the Argus here. Melbourne's champion rover Fred McGuinness returned to the field today after recovering from a severe ankle injury, immediately stamped an impression on the team's fortunes by starring in the win over Fitzroy. Melbourne won a low-scoring game, so they start doing all right. This ensures the Fuchsias a top four place in the first of the sectional matches, where they were to meet rampaging Collingwood. Damn, Collingwood.
Lost by 16 points. Yeah,
fixed us right up. And McGuinness was injured by a kick to the ankle that laid bare the bone in the game against Collingwood a fortnight ago.
It's a compound fracture, I recently learned, when you can see the bone.
Whoa. Yeah. So you need more than just the rice technique, you know, to elevate that.
Yeah.
A game in which Melbourne won by a single point. Oh,
which game was that?
The one against Collingwood where he broke his...
Not the sectional,
wasn't
it? They lost by 16 points.
No, this other one against Collingwood during the... Because, actually, it's interesting.
Let's have a look.
During the season.
Round 11.
Yes.
Round 11, they won by a point.
By 1 point. Yeah, 36-35.
5-6-4-11.
This incident had a sporting aftermath when Collingwood's Robert Rush, who had launched the kick, went to the Melbourne Rooms after the game and apologised for unwittingly maiming his opponent. That's nice. All. And then Fred goes, "That's all right, old chap. I know it was an accident."
They're such gentlemen,
aren't they?
That's
old
right.
chap.
We can only aspire to them. As Robert Rush was leaving the Fuchsias dressing room, McGuinness remarked that he was one of the fairest men playing football. Look, we still have players like that now. Like, look at... who we got? Someone in 2018.
Well,
it's a... What are you trying to say?
It is sort of
still gentlemen involved.
Yeah, I think so. There's sort of that rule of still, you know...
Looking after...
Looking up, yeah. Or, you know, even if something does happen on the field, you don't sort of... Screw anyone else over, basically. Yeah, you don't.
You wave to the trainers and call them over for someone else, even if it's not your team. Yeah,
well, you know, if someone maybe accidentally
does something to you behind the play, you don't really talk about it to the tribunal or those things.
The player's code.
Yeah.
But McGuinness had a pretty good year. He kicked 8 goals that year.
Only 8.
8 out of 50. Yeah, that's not a great year.
No.
But he was...
for him, it was good.
For Melbourne, it was good because he was the equal second highest goal kicker. There were 3 players who kicked 8, and Frank Langley was the highest goal kicker for Melbourne with 17 goals for the season.
It was also interesting to note that year that Dick Wardle was replaced as captain after 2 games. So they lost their reigning premiers. They lost their opening 2 games.
Well, he only played 3 games for the season.
Might have been injury, but they lost by 2 points to Geelong and then 4 points to South Melbourne.
Yeah,
those close losses doesn't really equal let's fire the captain or...
Melbourne are pretty good at overreacting to things, though. Think of Norm Smith just getting canned after he'd won, 5 premierships in 6 years, but because we lost, I think, 6 games or something,
the
he was
high
gone.
Standards. Yeah. So, yeah, Bill McClellan replaced him in round 3.
Yes. And it starts all the way back then.
Yeah, so Melbourne finished the season after the sectionals in 5th with 9 wins, 7 losses. 1 draw. They drew in round 7.
And for every time there's a draw...
It's a draw, both the teams are even.
They drew Fitzroy 5-6 each, 36 in round
Maybe,
7.
I reckon we could actually sell that to the AFL and they play that at the end of an actual draw.
And that song's actually from a song. So after the Collingwood St Kilda drawn grand final, someone actually wrote a drawn grand final song, a draw song that you play. And so there's a whole song like that's done. Like that. That's just a section of it that I grabbed for us. But yeah,
I love it. It's
quite
great.
Good. Yeah.
No one would like it. Like, no one's singing that song uproariously, are they?
No.
You're just listening to it with your head down.
Oh,
well, maybe next time we should actually listen to the whole song and we can have a talk about it.
That'd be great.
It was quite a good song. It was quite clever.
Nice.
All right.
But it was an interesting draw, I thought, in round 7, the fact that it wasn't like... one team had obviously been better than the other. Like, they'd just kicked more points or something like that. It was completely the same. It was 5-6-36 to 5-6-36.
Yep.
Which, so it was very obviously even. A very even sort of game.
Yep. All right, so that's halfway through. So usually we talk about the interstate games here, and Victoria played South Australia twice in 1901.
Hmm.
So the first game they played once in Victoria, once in Adelaide. The first game, Victoria won 8-7-55 to South Australia 4-16-40.
Was that in Victoria or in Adelaide?
That was in Victoria.
There you go. Victoria won in Victoria?
Yep.
Yeah.
And the second game was in Adelaide, which South Australia won.
Isn't that interesting?
11-15-81 to Victoria 9-8-62.
Home ground advantage.
Very much so. And, you imagine the travel time back then as well. It's not jumping on a plane. It's jumping on a train or a boat.
Yeah. Going through border town, you know. Having a pie on the border. I've done that a couple of times. It's great. just cruising on through.
Yeah. All right, so let's get back into the teams. So next we have the Maroons.
Mm. Oh, yes.
So still thereabouts, aren't they?
Thereabouts. So in round 3, they beat Essendon by 3 points, but unfortunately they lost their champion, Pat Hickey, who injured his leg and was facing possible retirement.
Yeah, I believe he actually did retire.
He did.
That leg. Yeah, and he was, it must have been a fantastic play down back, up forward. Yep. It's a shame. So it goes here, Alex Sloan puts awe in Fitzroy victory, but this is closer to the finals, so maybe talk about it then. But there's still quite capable.
Something else very interesting that happened in the finals with Fitzroy, but we'll leave that
to the
till later also. Yes.
They took a mid-season trip to Tasmania around 8 and 9.
Just for a holiday? Or?
Just for a holiday, and it saw a bit of a form slump where they really only won 2 more games for the rest of the season.
Mm. Really?
Yeah.
So you would have thought, coming together as a team and doing something like that would really bond you, but it just tore them apart.
Yep.
Interesting... Yeah. For Fitzroy, the leading goal kicker for the season was Gerald Brosnan, who kicked 33 goals for the season.
Yep.
Almost double that of the second closest, who was Jim Sharp and Bill McSpearin, both kicked 17 goals for the season.
Yeah, well, Gerald Brosnan was said to be the straightest left foot player to play the game, according to the Argus.
Wow.
I really love the way the Argus talks. I wish it was still going. I'd love to read the Argus.
So Fitzroy finished 4th with 9 wins, 7 losses and 1 draw against Melbourne with a percentage of 131.68.
A great effort.
Yes, indeed. Which gets us to Collingwood.
Oh, yes. Starting to really dominate.
Yep, so Collingwood's captain was Bill Proudfoot again. If we remember, he took over from Dick Condon.
Yes.
Mm.
After his implosion.
Dick Condon with his life ban.
Is there any Dick Watch today?
Absolutely not. It's
wonder what
ridiculous.
What do you reckon he'd... Dickless.
I would imagine him sitting in the crowd under a hat, yelling at Ivo Crap, pretending yes. I wasn't him. That's what Dick was doing that year, I reckon, definitely.
Exactly.
Just under a fedora. Your daughter's still a whore.
So, they lost in round 11 to Melbourne by a point in controversy, but I couldn't actually work out what the controversy was. Do you guys...
I couldn't find anything.
But they won against Fitzroy in round 13 in a similar style. I think it was where... It might be in this...
Yep.
Not that, yeah, in this book.
Yep.
Where there was a dispute over a goal that was kicked or a touch behind or hit the goalpost or something like that. So it worked against them against Melbourne, but against Fitzroy, they actually won that game. Yep. Fred Charger Halewood missed the first two games for the Pies, which the Pies lost. So it kind of showed the value of old Charger Halewood, who I think was their ruckman at the time. And Collingwood's Edward Rowell topped Collingwood's goal kicking with 31 goals as a rookie. It was his first year.
Big Teddy, yeah.
His first year.
Unbelievable. Mm. They were quite... Well, they obviously had two power forwards up there with Archie Smith as well, kicking 30.
Who previously won a goal kicking? Yeah, the best won. Goal kicker.
It was it 1899 or 8?
Well, he kicks 30 goals this year, but yes. Obviously not quite to win it, but
he got pretty close.
Potent.
98.
There you go. Yeah.
And the other thing I found interesting was in round 13 against Fitzroy, it was the only scoreless quarter in the history of the game. Neither team scored a single point.
In which quarter, sorry?
The second quarter.
Isn't it? That's amazing.
And if you remember, Fitzroy and Collingwood hated each other as well.
Yeah, so that would have been a really sort of ground out. It might have been people passing to the wrong player because they were just looking at the socks again or something,
I don't
know what's going on.
It was a low-scoring game as well, 24-19, which Collingwood won by 5 points. Did you find anything out about that game against Fitzroy?
Absolutely. So, obviously, they win by 1 point. In the second quarter, Collingwood captain Bill Proudfoot punched a Melbourne shot away right on the goal line under the rules. And as a clear matter of logic, the goal umpire had either to award no score or a goal, but he signalled a point. To the outrage of the Collingwood crowd, this time justified.
So, sorry. Explain that again. So the player, Bill Proudfoot punched the ball away or inside the goal line?
Right, on the goal line.
On the goal line. So it has to be no score, yeah.
Yeah, there you go. Under the rules, and as a clear matter of logic, the goal umpire had to either award a no score or a goal.
And
he signaled a point. I can't decide. That's what it seems like.
Just like, I can't choose.
Yeah, so that's two obvious mistakes that happened. One by that goal umpire, and the other one we have to find
out.
With
the siren, I think it was.
Ah, okay.
Yes. So the bell went in the Fitzroy match.
Yeah.
The bell went... Fitzroy were in attack and 5 points behind when the bell went 5 minutes early. The players stopped momentarily... looked at the clock on the stand and resumed to be met by a further furious ringing of the bells. Transpired that the chronometer of Fitzroy's Mr. Delzart had broken down and he agreed to accept the time of his fellow official, Mr. Manning of Collingwood.
What did he broken down? He'd freaked out.
No, his chronometer.
His watch.
Clock. Gotcha. Yeah, or watch. So they had the two... One person from each team, and Collingwood's person, because Fitzroy were down, just went, yep, that's time.
Yeah.
5 minutes early.
I think your watch is broken.
Yeah.
So, a furious crowd of Fitzroy supporters brandishing their timepieces. I'm just imagining everyone with their fob watches above their heads.
Oh, I say, sir! Goes,
look at this! Brandishing their timepieces, surrounded the timekeepers and made many choice suggestions to them. But the score stands 3-6 to 2-7. So there you go.
There you go.
Thanks there for you go. Too.
Yeah, right. There you go.
So Collingwood finished third, 12 wins, 5 losses, and 158.38%, which gets us to Essendon.
Ah, the Dons. The same olds.
Same olds. Who were 1-3 after the first 4 rounds. So quite a shocking start to the season. But my favourite thing I found about Essendon here was that they had a player called Hercules Valugi who was playing for them.
Great.
I can't find any information about it, just his name was Hercules.
Hercules Valugi.
Yeah. Not much I can find in there. They were the first team to score 1,000 points in the season. So they had quite a big score.
Yeah, maybe thanks to Thurgood being so fantastic this
Thurgood
year.
Thurgood had a fantastic season.
Yeah.
Also interesting to note, his mother died of cancer in 1901. So he was playing under that duress as well. Now, Charlie, you want to talk about Fred Hiskins?
I did. Briefly. It was very interesting. Well, Fred ended up being the leading goal kicker for the
season,
for the league, with 34 goals. So there were a few people very close together. But the reason I first picked up on him was because in round 6 against South Melbourne, Essendon kicked 17 behinds between its first and second goals of the game. Only since then, Geelong against St Kilda in 1919 and St Kilda against Fitzroy, so St Kilda were involved in both. St Kilda against Fitzroy in 1921 have beaten this unwanted record. And the reason that came up was because of those 17 behinds that they kicked between goal one and goal two, Fred Hiskins kicked 10 of them. So for a bloke who kicked 10 points in a single game,
he also managed kicked 2 goals in that game.
And
well.
2 goals, yeah. He managed to finish the 1901 season with 34 goals, which could have easily been 44.
Yeah. and Essendon finished that game with 3 goals, 23.
Yeah, shocking.
You're saying that was a record as well?
Sorry?
That's a record as well.
That for the game was a record, yeah. He was an interesting character. He played 50 games for Essendon. He played up to 1902 and then was accused of he was questioned over his loyalty.
Yeah.
Yes. Accused of disloyalty.
Yeah.
So he left and went and played back in Western Australia for 3 years.
Yeah.
And then he returned to Essendon in 1906 to play a final season.
Yeah.
It's an interesting because it was a bit of a dynasty. Although his
Him and Thurgood in the forward line.
Oh, killing. But there were also four other Hiskins that played VFL, AFL. Just VFL, sorry. So his younger brothers, he was the eldest of four brothers. His brothers, Arthur, Rupe and Stan, all played VFL football, but not for Essendon.
Yep.
And his son, Jack, played for Essendon in the 30s as well.
Nice.
He regularly used the place kick to shoot at goal and represented Victoria at interstate football in 1902 as well.
Nice.
So it was an interesting, for the guy who kicked the most goals, he also, I think, kicked the most points, which is quite interesting.
So between rounds 14 and 15, Essendon also took a trip to Tasmania, similar to Fitzroy.
Did it turn out in a different way?
Well, it did. They were successful in defeating South Tasmania by 42 points. And I think upon returning, I don't think they lost the game. They didn't. They won all their sectional games and then they won their semi and ultimately the grand final.
They did.
Yep. The other thing that I found interesting to note was 14 of the 19 games Essendon played, they scored more points than goals to finish with 157 goals for the season, 243 points. That's 61% of their scores were points.
It's huge. Not great, is it?
It's insane.
Although back then, I guess the supporters couldn't be like, this is your job, you get paid to do this. So,
I suppose that wasn't, they don't only have one job, they have other jobs as well.
They have other jobs also.
So Essendon finished the season in second, 12 wins, 5 losses, a percentage of 186.43, which was the best in the competition.
Actually, speaking of jobs, we need to go back to this because you told me a very interesting thing before we started about Fred McGuinness, who played for Melbourne.
No, we're about to get to Geelong.
Oh, sorry, he's Geelong. Sorry.
Yeah. Oh.
Which gets us to Geelong. Good segue.
Oh, Charlie. Yeah, there we go. So, see, I did that on purpose.
So smooth.
It wasn't Fred McGuinness. It was Firth McKellen.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah, see, yeah. That's what I've done.
I'll get Bill McSheeran mixed up with the other ones.
There's so many mix. And, yeah.
Yeah. So Geelong had another very successful season. They've finished on top or thereabouts all of the 5 seasons so far. They're captained by Henry Tracker Young.
The Pivotonians. Good on them.
Yep. Now, in round 2, Firth McKellen, he had a quite unusually quiet game for one reason.
Quite a great player.
So he was working in Lawn, which is a bit of a way away from Geelong, and he missed the bus back to Geelong on the day of the game, so he actually had to walk to the train stop, which, if you've been to Lawn, that's a 47-kilometre walk through the mountains to Winchelsea or something like that.
Somewhere on Dean's Marsh.
Past Dean's Marsh, yeah. So it's about a 47-kilometre walk that he's done to get to the train to get back to Geelong. So he had an unusually quiet game, unfortunately.
Understandably.
Not surprisingly.
No. They finished on top and dominated for most of the season, but I couldn't find a heap of information about them. I know they won 4 games by under a goal. So they beat Melbourne by 2 points, Essendon by 4 points, Fitzroy by 1 point, and South by 4 points. So they had some close wins. There wasn't a heap of information floating around about Geelong then.
They were obviously, sometimes that happens. They were obviously very dominant for the entire season. An interesting thing that I picked up here is they won 2 more games than Essendon, who finished second.
Yep.
But far less convincingly. They kicked 853. Had 853 points for and 597 points against for a percentage of 142.
Yeah.
Whereas Essendon kicked over 1,000 points, most of which were actual points, and finished with a percentage of 186. So although they won 2 less games, they were obviously far more convincing when they did do it.
Mm. And it feels like now...
They made the finals.
The Pivotonians, well, yeah.
Mm.
Well... It sounds like they got a bit of a monkey on their back as well.
About finals.
Yeah,
yeah.
They can't get the job done. So they finished first with 14 wins, 3 losses, 142.88%, as Charlie said. Which gets us to the finals, I guess. Did you want to add something?
The finals. No, I was just going to say, if you look, in those sectional finals, they won 2 out of the 3. The one they did lose was to Essendon.
By 33 points. At home as well.
Yeah, at Corio.
Yeah.
And Essendon doubled their score,
33-66. Yep. Oh, they just got overpowered.
So finals, as I said, was different this year. So there was a top 4 after the sectionals, and it was first versus third and second versus fourth. So there was 2 semi-finals played that year. In the first semi-final, it was Collingwood playing Geelong, and Collingwood won that game 6-9-45 to Geelong 3-6-24. So they got pretty overwhelmingly and comprehensively beaten in that final.
They did.
So I think they just can't cope with the big time.
No, well, it seems that way. I mean, that was at the MCG, so I guess Collingwood did have a bit of home ground advantage, but still it seems they really just can't
cope with the pressure.
Yeah, no. Like me at the moment, obviously. Yeah. No, they just couldn't get it done.
Was it Eddie James that played for them?
Yeah.
Yeah, so he was injured last season and couldn't get back to his same form. So maybe they're sort of lacking up at forward or something. Possibly, like that, Can't just quite get enough scoring.
So Geelong got knocked out of the finals, which angered them.
Because in the years previously, they would have been able to...
They would have had the right to challenge... For the premiership, because they'd finished on top. So there's a right.
They finished on top the year before.
No, they hadn't. But that was always the rule. The rule had been in the previous final systems that you had the right to challenge if you finished on top.
Yeah,
if you didn't win the flag.
Mm.
So Geelong protested vehemently.
Yeah, vehemently.
A lot.
Vigorously.
The other semi-final was a quite a controversial one between Essendon and Fitzroy. Essendon continuing their ploy of kicking many more points and goals. Did kick 19 points, so 6-19. But they were led by Albert Thurgood, who absolutely starred in this game. He scored five of the Bombers' goals. Six goals.
Yeah. Unbelievable.
But it was his first goal that caused quite the controversy.
Well, yes. So the controversy was that, well, after the game, because Fitzroy lost, they lodged an official protest against that result because they only lost by 1 point, and they alleged that the goal umpire had erred in awarding Essendon's first goal, which was kicked by Thurgood, because the ball had hit the post. No decision had been made, but later in that week, Fitzroy withdrew its protest against the result, and the scheduling of the final, the grand final, wasn't affected.
Mm.
An inquiry later on in September, though, found that the goal umpire had made a mistake, but no change was made to the score after the finding. So we tried to do a bit of digging into, firstly, why Fitzroy withdrew its protest, but haven't really been able to find much about that. And if we can, we'll sort of we'll get back to you later. But also, and this was a question we were talking about before, we have no idea how the inquiry found out that the goal umpire had made a mistake. So it's not like they were using video footage or anything like that. So just unless the goal umpire, after the fact, had been like, I fucked up. I made a mistake. It did hit the post. I just didn't want to say it at the time because I was embarrassed.
The crowd was yelling.
They said it was a goal. I go for Essendon. So it was. There's no information that I've been able to find, or any of us have been able to find, about how they figured that out. But it was, you know, what an interesting turn of events it could have been.
Which lined up our grand final, which was Essendon versus Collingwood. Now, before we do that, a very quick look at Ivo Crapp.
Ivo.
So round 14.
Yeah.
He was doing something. You're the umpire expert here, Kaz. What was he doing?
Absolutely. Well, very revered umpire. Obviously did this year's
especially
grand final.
This season in particular,
he is known for starting to call out his decisions while the game's in play. So, for example, he might blow the whistle and yell out sling, or blow the whistle and yell out push behind. And I think we call it blow, show, go. So you blow the whistle, show the signal, and then run off to the next position. But I always got told to call it out as well. And
blow, show, call, go?
Blow, show, call, go. It's in there as well. Call it out. Because as soon as you've called it, people around you know what it's for, and the game's so fast, you just move on to the next bit of play. And it's just
doesn't give anyone time to really think about it.
Isn't it amazing that, you know, he just did that off his own bat? It wasn't something that any, you know, umpires had decided, and then it's obviously just become part of our game.
Which
makes so much sense. But for him to come in and just do that.
Yeah.
I mean,
change the game.
Should be called the crap rule.
That's crap communication.
Yes. Nice, Kaz.
That's right. If you like in anything, really, isn't it? Communicating.
Are you umpiring this season?
I want to. That's why I got my running gear with me right now. Get started.
Can you, when you're doing your umpiring this year, can you teach everyone about Ivo Crapp?
I will make it my duty to talk about it every single training session.
All right, so let's get to the grand final. And we have some... I think, Charlie, you've got the first.
I do, the first quarter.
Ah, here we go.
Essendon versus
So
Collingwood.
The final match, Essendon versus Collingwood, which had an attendance. It was at Lake Oval and had an attendance of 30,036. This is one of my ongoing fascinations of, of watching their crowds rise.
Yes.
Which is 10,000 more than the year before. So they had 20,000 at the grand final in 1900 and 30,000 at the grand final in 1901.
And out of interest, which ground again?
Lake Oval.
Yes.
Mm. The gate takings were 639 pounds.
Oh, whoa. Amazing.
That is huge.
So as you can imagine, long before the 3 o'clock kickoff, the ground was comfortably full, and the crowd still thronged in from all directions until when the ball was bounced, there was not any available room for more, and the fence around the playing space in many places gave way. Right, it sounds like sort of like an Italian or South American soccer game.
Mm.
The day was not altogether suitable for football, a strong northerly wind blowing almost across the ground, and consequently a great deal of the play was on the pavilion wing where the ball was continually out of bounds. Both sides were fully represented, Collingwood leaving out Monaghan in favour of Farrell, and Essendon taking in Valugi and Mann instead of Kennedy and Peppard. Tom Sherrin, the Collingwood manufacturer, had prepared two balls, one of 15 ounces, with which the team played, and another of 14 ounces, which was discarded on account of it being too light for such a windy day. Isn't that interesting? Yeah. Do they do that today?
Well, you have to choose the ball, and you know, you grab
based on the weight.
Yeah. Must be a reason.
The balls were made of the best cowhide, double tanned and cut from the heart of the skin. Although Mr. Sherrin is a member of the Collingwood committee, the Essendon men were quite prepared to play with the ball, which gave every satisfaction.
Because Sherrin's factory was in Collingwood, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a Collingwood company.
And I think at Victoria Park there was like a Sherrin stand. If I'm correct, I might.
I think so.
There's a bit of an article about that next year.
Well, let's get to that next year.
We can.
First quarter, Kaz.
Okay, first quarter. Essendon attacked at the start towards the late goal, and though the wind was, if anything, against them, they kept the Collingwood backs very busy, but could not pick up the range. In one of those early rushes, Proudfoot, in turning the attack, wrenched his back and was hampered for the rest of the day. Gavin took a high mark, which was the forerunner of many more. Hyman also brought down a good one, and then Valugi... and Stuckey by
hand. Hercules Valugi?
Hercules.
That is Hercules Valugi.
Yes. By hand. Go on by handball. Got the ball to Hastings, who put in a fine run, and Griffiths from the ruck with a long kick landed the ball in front where Kinnear marked and easily punted first goal for Essendon. The first point.
Crowd cheer.
The first point after a quarter of an hour's play. Essendon soon got another goal. Wright sent the ball to Barry, who ran and, picking out Thurgood cleverly, the big fellow marked.
The big fellow. He was a big fellow.
Yeah, that's right. His shot for goal fell wide. Kinnear picked it up and, kicking over his head, landed the ball in Martin's hands, a foot from the goal. He wasted no time and up went the two flags again. Collingwood then attacked vigorously. Panam raced away and kicked in front of the goal where McCulloch easily marked, and Collingwood yelled with delight as they saw a prospective goal, but Panam had gone out of bounds and the ball had to go back. And we've got...
out of bounds, on the full.
It wasn't on the full, but it went out of bounds anyway. Nice. Thank you.
And that was the...
Oh, yes. The quarter soon ended. Essendon, 3 goals... Collingwood, 1 behind.
Good. In the second quarter, it had been a hard-fought quarter with Essendon mostly in the lead. As soon as they changed, Smith had a chance for Collingwood but kicked wildly. The men were going all they knew, and at times it was not gentle. But Crap had them well in hand.
Woo, yeah.
Essendon were not to be denied, and Stuckey passed beautifully. Thurgood marked, and allowing splendidly for the wind, the same old fourth goal appeared. Hard, close play in which every man was prominent followed, and Collingwood, working like tigers, sent the ball up time and again, only to find Gavin marking magnificently for Essendon and turning the attack.
Oh, yeah.
Collins was hurt and went forward for a while, and Thurgood came back in his place. At halftime, the scores were Essendon 5-2, 32, and Collingwood 3 behind. Each side had worked well, and Essendon were jubilant. But some of the older heads remembered the match at Collingwood earlier in the season when the Magpies had been almost as far behind and came back and won, and they urged their men to keep going.
Interesting. So Thurgood was almost the original utility. Went was forward, went back, did it all.
Did it all.
So in the third quarter, as soon as it began, Collingwood attacked and Essendon drove them off. Once Hailwood seemed to have scored, but Gavin, head and shoulders above everyone, marked right in the goal. Twice Essendon got behinds, both by Thurgood, who got the ball on each occasion from Stuckey after runs by Hastings and Collins. Then came an exciting time, for Collingwood had in a few minutes put on 12 points, and their supporters yelled with delights. But the scoring for that quarter was done, though Morgan's still working hard and the score stood. Essendon, 5 goals, 4 behinds, 34. To Collingwood, 2 goals, 3 behinds, 15 when they changed over.
All right, last quarter, Kazman.
Okay, so fourth quarter. In the final term, it was plain both sides had had enough. They had battled with each other and the breeze, and they had taken all the bumps inseparable from such a contest, and now the work was telling its tale.
Don't love the way this stuff's written.
Oh, so oh, much.
Mate.
It makes me so happy. As well.
Both sides were fighting it right now, though, and the leaders could not afford to relax their efforts. The game was slowing down, but Essendon had the upper hand, and Barry and McKenzie passed beautifully to Thurgood. He put up another goal by splendid judgment. There was little more in it, save a run by Valugi. It was a Herculean effort by him, which was answered by a far better one, in fact, the best of the day, by Hyman, well shepherded by Dow. Up till the very last kick, Collingwood stuck to it, but were beaten. The scores being Essendon, 6 goals, 7 behinds, 43 points. Collingwood, 2 goals, 4 behinds, 16 points.
The same olds win again.
Woo!
Get it, Bully!
At the conclusion of the game, Mr. Beasley, Mr. Strickland and Proudfoot, the captain of Collingwood, represented the Collingwood team, came over to the Essendon dressing rooms and congratulated them and the Essendon captain, Collins. He responded, "Isn't it nice how all the captain, like the losing
they
captains,
did that
go into the room
straight away?
Can't imagine that. Well, I guess well, they could
just happen, but it's kind of like now you it just has to be done, I guess.
Yeah, they
it?
Do. They do their speech, don't they? Mm. So angry, you can
yeah.
tell.
Yeah,
can
they're
tell
just,
they
they're just disappointed. And
Later on, Mr. James Aitken, on behalf of the South Melbourne Cricket Club, invited both teams into the Skittle Alley and congratulated them and drank to their health. And then Mr. W. J. Mountain, the mayor of Essendon, on behalf of his club and Collingwood, thanked the cricket club for their courtesy and congratulations. These speeches were not over till very late. Now, very quickly, gentlemen, before we continue on with this, I have the same old Essendon song here I'm going to sing in celebration of Essendon's second premiership.
Oh, how is this for preparation?
Amazing.
I don't know how it goes.
Yeah, what the tune
I'm
is.
Making, I'm not, I've got no idea. I'm making
it. That's all right. That's all right.
I'm very good at this.
The same old Essendon we used to be, the same old Essendon we hope to be. No matter win or lose, we're always on the loose, always the same old Essendon.
See, that's genius yes. because most songs now... that's not true. I was going to say most songs now talk about, you know, what's going to happen in the future, whereas they're like, well, we're just so great, let's be like we have been, which I really like.
Yeah,
it was interesting. A couple of interesting things about the game. Which I would say about Thurgood, especially.
Yeah.
So he kicked 3 of the 6 goals that Essendon kicked that day.
Yep.
One of his goals was kicked with a 79-meter drop kick.
Mm.
And another one, which was measured immediately after the match, it says here in parenthesis, just to make sure that we understand how correct this stat is,
yeah.
was scored with a 93-yard or 85-meter place kick into a strong headwind.
Oh, wow.
So he
thumping
was
kick.
A genuine 6 feet tall playing at a touch over 12 stone.
Wow.
So he was a big man the day.
Yeah.
But 12 stone's a big boy.
But he was not the best player of the game. Apparently Hugh Gavin was. Essendon's Hugh Gavin, who was a defender. Because he just denied Collingwood time and time again.
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess... Because the only... Apart from the 4 games that Essendon lost when Thurgood wasn't playing, they only lost one other game for the season, which was to Collingwood.
Yep.
When Thurgood was held goalless as well. So they were obviously a bit afraid of Collingwood and what they were capable of. So it was amazing to, you know, see everyone stepping up on the day and doing the job.
Yep.
There's a photo of him here, actually, during the grand final. It's at lemon time, where they're resting and they're eating lemons. And he's standing up there, and he's a head above the other guys. That's him over there. Big man. So he's given champion of the colony. Can I just quickly say something about this other guy,
champion
Fred Leach?
Champion of the Commonwealth.
Well, it says here about this from the Argus again, this guy Fred Leach, he's been named champion of the season by the old boy, the Argus. So maybe they're playing around with the name there. And because, you know, we're talking about the way they used to speak. Part of the article goes, as one opposition barracker remarked last year, if we had Fred Leach, we'd licked creation. He's the wonder of the age. Fantastic play there.
Best thing since sliced bread.
Now, the only other thing I was going to mention at the end of the season here was Melbourne player Fred McGuinness,
yes,
who has mentioned. He was injured and I think had something wrong with his eyes or something wasn't right with him. So they decided to have a fundraising match. And they actually played the best of the VFL versus the best of the VFA, which was the first time those two leagues had collaborated.
Because they hated each other. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Fashion from when everyone
them over. So they had a charity game at the end of the season, which the VFL won 9-17-71 to the VFA 4-3-27.
Kind of see why they left.
Yeah.
is that also the events which give the origin of the saying, you're a one-eyed supporter?
Oh.
I don't know.
No.
So that gets us to the end of the season.
And tough crowd.
So let's quickly go through the stats here. Champion of the Commonwealth was
Albert Thurgood.
The highest goal kicker was
Fred Hiskins of Essendon also. So
who kicked 34
with 34 goals, yes.
Yep.
Who took the wooden spoon though? Spoon.
Oh, gee, I wonder.
I wonder who it was.
I think it was St Kilda again.
Yeah, again. Oh.
One mighty win.
Geelong's highest score from 1899 still stands at 162.
Unbelievable.
And the flag tally now reads Essendon 2, Fitzroy 2, Melbourne 1.
Yeah, that's all right.
We can
manage that.
And that gets us to the end of the show.
That's right. We'll save Kaz a special ending next time.
Oh, okay. Nothing for today.
Sorry.
No?
Oh.
Do you don't want to do like just a quick slam poem or something like that?
Kaz's quips.
Those of you who listened to the end of the last episode, we did try that. It would lasted two lines.
Interesting tonight. You know that joke? How many goals did Essendon? Who scored 5 goals for Essendon in the 1990 grand final?
Yep,
the whole team.
Yeah.
Well, why can't we have who scored 2 goals for Collingwood in 1901 grand final? The whole team.
I think it's slightly too far back.
We need to teach them
to really burn people.
Yeah. Take that, Collingwood!
Yeah.
2 goals.
You jerks
scored in 1 quarter.
Yeah.
We could say that because they have a good season next year.
Yeah. All right, well, that's our show. Thanks for listening.
Thank you.
See you later.
See you soon.
Bye-bye.
Hooroo.
You can contact Kick to Kick on email at kicktokickpodcast@gmail.com or add us on Instagram, which is @kicktokick_podcast. Or find us on Twitter, which is @kicktokickpod. And thanks for listening.